Let me tell you a fun fact. Within the last two centuries, more than 90% of the world's millionaires have been created by investing in real estate. But if done incorrectly, without the right knowledge, required skills, or partners, it can also create a ton of problems and a lot of sleepless nights. You feel like sometimes there are way too many gurus out there trying to sell you on a weekend course, or just too much noise to cut right to the facts? Yup. We did too, and this is why we started this podcast. Our goal is to provide real estate investors, entrepreneurs, and enthusiasts with all of the most recent knowledge, secrets, tips, tricks, and tactics so that you can grow your own portfolios, increase your returns, net worth, and most importantly, create generational wealth for you and your loved ones. Remember, this is your real estate career. Information is your sword and shield. So eat hearty, prepare for battle, and grind your way to victory. My name is Tejas Gosai. I'm joined by my partner, Jeremy Moyer, and we welcome you to the Real Estate Investor MBA podcast. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome back to your favorite real estate podcast. It's Real Estate Investor MBA. I have my partner, Jeremy Moyer.
How you doing?
And always, we like to start with a thank you to everyone who's made our program possible. Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Google Play, we're all over the internet, social media. Thank you, Jeremy, for everything you're pushing out. And also, we got a totally revamped website. Check out www.rei.mba and let us know what you think. But Jeremy, we've had on amazing guests. We've constantly pumped out some good content and we're keeping it alive. You want to tell everyone about the next one?
Absolutely. But just to mention, Tejas mentioned we have a new website. We also have sign up for a newsletter, get on a mailing campaign. We have a lot of cool opportunities that I think people, you want to be aware of coming in 2022 and in the coming years ahead. So definitely check that out. Stay abreast of everything. But yeah, absolutely. Our guest today is Damian Lupo. So Damian is a professional real estate investor, a serial entrepreneur. He's actually a best-selling author of 11 books. He is a four-time college dropout who actually was thrown out of one of his schools for opening a bookstore in his dorm room. But Damian became a multimillionaire by the age of 25, then also lost his $20 million empire by the age of 30. So he had to reinvent himself. He rebuilt himself. And he really now lives for a mission of freeing people from financial bondage. So he first bought his first rental house with a Visa card. You know, that quickly snowballed to buying over 150 rental houses in seven different states in less than 5 years. But Damian, right now, he's founded Total Control Financial in 2010. To help people achieve financial freedom. His company focuses on qualified retirement plans, which are more flexible than IRAs and 401ks, in his opinion. So, Tejas, we came out a really great interview recently with Damian. What do you think?
He's awesome. It definitely taught me things that I did not know at all. Totally out of left field, some of these concepts. So, very cool. He's very eloquent as well. I like his stories. He's got a good voice.
Yeah, he's very passionate about the topic. He's passionate about helping others kind of, again, like Tejas just mentioned, he wasn't aware of the qualified retirement plans. Honestly, I heard about them once or twice, but really didn't know the details. So he's all about education, which we love. And that's what we're doing here on the podcast. We're just educating, getting information out there. And, we hope you guys enjoy the episode. So welcome back to Real Estate Investor MBA. We're here with Damian Lupo, who was on previously, shared tons of great information, mistakes investors are making with IRAs, that they use for real estate investing. And, we talked about qualified retirement plans, which sounded like an amazing investment vehicle, a lot of benefits, some really good info. Tejas, what do you thought?
Totally alien to me, did not know any of this. Very exciting. I regret starting my 529 plan after hearing this from my children.
So yeah, very cool. It's great to have somebody on who knows something that a lot of our listeners probably don't. So I appreciate it.
Perfect. Damon, how are you doing today?
I'm doing awesome. It's good to see you guys.
Yeah, likewise. So today's episode, we're talking about how to educate children on financial matters. You know, I love this topic. I have two boys. Tejas has two boys. You know, I'm sure Tejas does as well, but I enjoy teaching both of them about finances, difference between assets and liabilities, cash flow, all that stuff. You know, even sometimes I take them out to properties that I go walk through, you know, they get a chance to see what I look at, how I interact with the broker, et cetera. So, Amy, if we have a parent listening to this episode, which I'm sure there's going to be quite a few, you know, and they know they need to provide this type of information, this financial education to their children since they're not getting it at school, you know, what can they start doing, especially if they have no clue where to start? What type of advice would you give those parents?
Well, there's a couple of things. One, kids and for that matter, all adults love games. That's why you see e-gaming going crazy. You see people watching in stadiums. You see people watching and paying to watch people play video games. Like, it's like crazy to me. And yet this is what's happening. The metaverse, it's all about gamifying things. So how do you get kids involved? Well, you gamify stuff like what you're doing, showing your kids. One of the things that I love doing with everybody, including kids, is playing cash flow with them. Yeah. Robert Kiyosaki's game. And that's because they start, you learn more about your money habits and how you think about money, and you stop spending money on doodads faster than any other thing that's out there. It's the funniest thing to me is I'll see people go, man, because I bought the game and it was $200. Now it's like $40 on Amazon. And I laugh and they're like, oh, it's $200 or now it's $40. And I'm laughing. I'm like, you know, your life is your own damn fault, according to Larry Winget. And it's, you did it. And it's because you're thinking that a game that's going to teach you how you're running your money mind is not worth $40, and yet you're going to go spend $40 at Chick-fil-A next Tuesday. So people have a value proposition problem. And when you start doing things like investing in game, it also connects you with your kids, and you can start learning from them, and you'll learn about yourself. So gamifying and then doing what you're doing, which is engaging with your kids in the real world. And I think a lot of parents either one don't know what they're doing, or two, they're like, nah, I'm just going to do it. My kids won't get it. Kids absorb everything. And what happens is when kids are around that stuff, they pop up one day at 18, 20, 25, or whatever it is, and they say things, and parents go, where did you hear that? It's like, well, yeah, I was around you for however long. And then that can be good or bad. You know, like, I remember my parents arguing, and so probably created a lot of not good programming in me when they were arguing. Now, if they'd been out there looking at rental property, like, you know, you're talking about, that'd be a different program. I was the one that was actually hiring them to go take me out to drive around and do my business when I was 11 years old. So I was trying to teach them. It didn't work. My dad was still trading knives, you know, dollar for dollar. That was stupid. So with kids, it's experiential and gamifying. And here's a rule for everything. The way you do anything is the way you do everything. And if you think that you can do one thing and tell your kids something else, you're wrong. You have to ask yourself, do I want my kids emulating not only what you say, what you do? And this is hard because life is hard. And so what do you do for your kids? Be a better human being. And that's the hardest work. So most people won't do it. And they wonder why the kids are screwed up. I'm not really sure what happened with the Trump kids because they seem to be doing pretty good. But then, you know, I don't know what that's all about. But, you know, the reality is, I mean, seriously, you look, and I bring that up because you look at all these kids the kids are successful. They're smart. They're sophisticated. And that's not an accident. Like, that was very methodical. Like, you know, love him or hate him, but you ask, what did he do? And one of the things that Donald Trump did before he was president is his kids were out in the middle of his businesses. They had a hard hat on job sites. They were running different things, or they were in the middle of it. They were getting dirty. And most parents don't want their kids to get dirty. They don't want them to get hurt. They're too busy sanitizing everything. And their kids walk into the world and they get clobbered because they have no intelligence and they have no experience. And that's the biggest mistake parents make, because they're trying to protect their kids from everything. And that's not real.
No, not at all. I have a anecdote to share that goes right along with this. So I have some Jewish Orthodox clients, a lot actually. And, you know, I'm a commercial real estate agent. We have a very active practice. About 6 years ago, I met a gentleman who was looking at a multifamily, younger guy. And we started talking. I'm like, you know, when did you learn all this? Whatever. He's like, I went to Sunday school, like our temple. They learn cap rates and cash flow and everything from 12 and 13 years old. It's, you know, bred into them. and it's just a culture. You know, that's exactly how it's going to be for their future. So it's neat to hear this. There are cultures that do perform in this space. It's just not as many as they should.
Now, and too much messaging is about wealth is bad, and you have idiots like AOC out there proclaiming that we should be redistributing the wealth, and Elizabeth Warren saying rich is bad. And I'm looking at her and I'm like, who have you ever employed? Nobody. All you know how to do is take. You're like freaking Robin Hood, but bad. And maybe Robin Hood is bad in general. But the problem is we have people that are out there that are pushing an agenda that money is bad, wealth is bad. I'm like, no, poverty is bad. That's the damn sin. And it's like, wait. And then we bastardize people that have been successful. People are coming after Elon. And I'm like, yeah, Elon just paid more in taxes than most people will pay in 1,000 lifetimes in 1 year. And like the single biggest tax bill of all time of anybody in history. And people are like, oh no, it's not enough because he's got so much. Like this level of envy and jealousy, it's unfortunate. But you know, when you have people that are, I think the problem, you guys, is that when people stop thinking they have a chance at creating something, they start trying to take it. And when people think they have a chance, like when I was younger, I was looking out there going, I have a chance to create $1 billion. So I'm going to go for it. I'm not trying to take it from anybody. I'm hustling and grinding. And I know you guys are too. If we didn't think we had a chance to do it, yeah, I think there'd be some envy and jealousy. And I think, unfortunately, a lot of people have no idea what the path is because they've been listening to institutionalized education and our political system that basically says, no, this is where you have to be. And you're like, well, yeah, but I want to be up there, but there's no path. And that's the problem. When people have hope, they don't go into a socialist communist state like, you know, like in Russia or China. They go and say, I want to create something. And that's what we need more of. And that's what parents have to do. They have to be a good steward of their kids and their money. And they have to be a good example. And so like that environment you're talking about where they're learning about cap rate at 12, great. You know what? If you don't have that, freaking create it and see what happens.
Awesome. No, I mean, I think you hit the nail right on the head. You know, it starts with education. It starts with at home, you know, and you're right. Kids are a sponge. You know, we love the cash flow game. We have the adult version and the kid version at home, and we play it probably monthly. And my 8-year-old kicks my ass every time. Like, I can't win. And it's funny because I see him, you know, the asset cards, and you see how much money you have. And like, he's very gifted at math, but he's internally calculating his ROI on the cash that he has to outlay for the assets he buys. He's like, no, that's not enough. He's like, I need my passive income at X. And I'm like, but it's awesome. We've probably played it 8 or 9 times already and just seen what he's picked up. Like, he was spewing off like interest rates and dividends and like this terminology to his grandfather the other day. And he like looked at him and I'm like, you're right. They absorb things and it's cool to see it come out, you know, in the context that it's supposed to come out. Like, it's actually, it's perfect. You know, when he was talking about it, it was exactly what he should have said. And he said it. You know, but it's really interesting to see what they pick up.
Yeah, like everything.
Yeah, like everything. Yeah, and sometimes I don't want them to pick up things. He does, right?
If it comes out of your mouth, it's coming out of their mouth.
Like, yeah, very true. Very true. You know, so outside of that game, Damien, are there any other tools or, you know, obviously constantly communicating and teaching is one thing, but, you know, let's say there's someone that has a game and they play it every now and then, they don't play it, or maybe they'll go pick up the game. Is there anything else parents could be doing with their kids to help them, set them up for success, in at least with financial education?
I think one of the interesting things I find is when I go to these events, I go to seminars, and not very often, but I'll see parents with their kids, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12-year-old kids, and I'm just smiling. I'm like, man, that is epic. So bringing kids to those environments and immersing them in these spaces, and then they just overhear conversations. And then I was at an event in Florida recently a few days ago, and there was a guy, a dentist, with his son. His son's 12 or 13. And I was like, you're like an adult. You just, because he was in these environments and it was becoming normalized. So if you want to teach your kids anything, whatever it is, it has to become normalized, and then it'll be automatic. And it's like, I've done a lot of martial arts for the last 20 years. And one of the things that becomes normalized is the way you move. And so when you move, you either by default, you move and you're not thinking about it, or you train. Because if you go out there and you go, I'm going to make $1 million. Well, that's like aspirational, and you're like going to rise to the occasion, but that's not how we operate. we don't rise to the occasion. We fall to the level of our training. And so in martial arts, you go train and you train and you train. And if somebody comes after you, you don't think, you literally are just moving and reacting because of the training. Same thing with money. Deal comes at you. If you've trained and trained and trained, you just naturally are going to do a thing. But if somebody goes into the real world, they have no training. And then at 25, somebody brings them a deal and it says 27% return, or you're going to double your money in a month. They go, amazing. And they have no idea. Mm-hmm. And so they go do it and they lose all their money. Like, how do I know this? Because I've done it. Like, I've lost my money three times, all of it, more than all of it, 5 million more than all of it. Like, this is a problem. And that's why when you're around people, you got to be really careful who your kids are around. And when you start bringing them into those environments with people that are not only savvy and wealthy, but have integrity, like, you got to be really mindful. Unfortunately, there's not a lot of integrity on the internet, like, you know, fake, like, you make up your news, make up your facts. Yeah. But this is reality. And you've got to be, as a parent, you do have to be thoughtful, and you also have to make sure that your kids have exposure to all the crap, and then you can help them process it. I think that a lot of parents are trying to say, well, my kid's not going to see social media. I'm like, good luck on that one ever working out. And they probably already are. So being there with them so that you can help them process that, and then making things normalized, like being skeptical and optimistic at the same time. That's a skill set. That's about different thinkings at the same time. If you're just skeptical of everything, you'll be afraid your whole life. If you're just optimistic, you'll lose $25 million like I did, because you will realize that you're stupid. But you've got to be thoughtful in these different ways, and it takes training. So I think what it comes down to is time and conscious presence with kids. And that takes a lot of work. So the question is, are you committed?
I got to jump in. Everything that you're saying and everything we've been saying for this episode, which is primarily about children, can totally apply to the investors that are just getting into real estate. You know, your last episode that we talked about was about retirement, which is why we're talking about this at the beginning of life. But, you know, normalizing, gamifying, like, that's what we're doing with our younger investors that want to buy a 4-unit or a 6-unit. They've never seen the property. They have no idea how to run the numbers. They need the Excel sheet to do all that. So, yeah, I'm just thinking in my head, like, whoever's listening, all this can apply to you too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It gets to the point where it's automatic. Like, as a baby investor, it's just like raising a child. Like, you're raising yourself. You're like, okay, you're lost in the woods, and you will get killed if you don't have people protecting you. It's the same thing, you know, when you're a child. So I think that there's something to it. Eventually you're ready to go into the wild. And that's the whole point of being in mentoring programs and masterminds and doing smaller deals. You're testing and then things are just like, okay, well, they're automatic. Like, if I look at a deal, I can vet a deal in less than 5 minutes, like any deal. And
explain what that means.
So when I vet a deal, I'm looking at the deal and deciding what reasons am I going to say no? So that's vetting, is basically choosing and sorting out the facts. Is this a good deal or a bad deal? That's what vetting comes down to. And the way I approach deals is every deal is a bad deal until it proves itself otherwise. Yeah. And it starts with the people. So I look at the people, and most people skip the people. They go straight to the Excel sheet. That is not the deal, by the way. You got to start with the people. And most people skip that. They go, like I said, they go to the numbers, and the numbers are just a part. The numbers are like 15% of the deal. Like, mm-hmm. I've had tons of deals that I've seen. I've been in a number of them where the numbers were good, but the people weren't in place, and I lost millions of dollars. So when you have the right people, you can have a bad deal. And so the vetting process, the good or bad, is me looking at the people. How committed are they? How serious? Do they have any experience? Are they learning on my dime, mm-hmm. or are they going to go in there and do whatever it takes? Are they Spartans? Or the socialists? Like, I'm really thinking about the people more than the spreadsheet. And I think, unfortunately, most people go straight to the spreadsheet because it's easier to understand, because emotional intelligence and understanding the human element is a lot more complex, and you have to use intuition. And if you have no experience, how do you have any intuition? Pretty hard.
Yeah, people get burned all the time just going straight to the numbers, thrown in ridiculous offers. Our market has changed from, you know, 8-9% listing prices on cap rates to 5-6%. And there's still knuckleheads that don't understand what management and vacancy is. So it's a lot of fun being a listing agent in this community.
We're in a weird time, guys. I mean, the reality is, things don't make a whole lot of sense. It doesn't mean that they won't continue to make a whole, that they still won't be screwed up for a long time, because you're not going to see the Federal Reserve and the central banks around the world just stop. Like, I love this idea that the central bank in the US is going to raise rates and they're going to slow things down. And I'm like, sure you are. That's going to last about 1 month when things fall off a cliff, and then you're going to go back, because nobody wants the pain. Everybody is addicted to the painkiller. I mean, we have this oxy problem in America, and it's the same thing with, it's financial heroin that we're addicted to, all these cheap dollars spewing all over the place. And people are like, well, if I buy something, I'll double it next year. That's automatic. That's the assumption. That's the normalized expectation. And we have a cognitive bias towards what's happened recently, thinking that that's going to play out and continue. And that's not going to continue forever. At some moment, there's going to be a halt and people are going to say, wait, the music stopped. Now what do we do? And they have no experience. That's the good thing about going and having bald gray people on your team that have been around for 30, 40 years. Like, yeah, last three times this happened, here's what it looks like. Oh, okay. I've never seen that because you've only been around for 5 or 8 years. That's hard.
Yeah, surviving some cycles definitely gets you some skin.
Absolutely.
Or a lack of hair. I mean,
what kind of markets are you running around in looking at deals?
So I look around, I'm running around looking at people, and I honestly don't really care where the market is, because I'm not interested at this point in my career, my life, I'm not really interested in being an operator. And so what I need to know is who's going to be running the deal, who's going to do it successfully, and what's their contingency plan when they get hit by a truck. Mm-hmm. Because the reality is people do. I mean, you know, in our community, I've had a number of people die. I talk to them and then a month later I get a call and they're like, hey, my spouse just died. I'm like, I was just talking to him. And so you deal with the aftermath, and what you don't want to do is, I don't think most people ask that question. What happens if something happens to you? You know, people have these things and there's partnerships. And I remember this in my 20s doing deals, and I don't think anybody ever asked me that. I mean, granted, I wasn't likely to die, but stuff happens. Mm-hmm. And so I'm looking for people. And it takes, nobody wants to hear this because everybody wants everything today, but it takes years. I'm more interested in dating people and you know, spending time with them. If I'm gonna, like, I've had people that are like, you know, we've invested a pretty good amount of money with you. And I'm like, yeah. And they're like, I think I want to meet you. And I'm like, I really want you to come meet me. Like, let's go meet, let's do. And people will fly in. I've had numerous lunches and dinners with people. And so if you're investing, I think that if you care about your money at all, unless you're a crazy person, you go have some FaceTime with the person, look them in the eyeballs. You want to find out, is that person going to care about my money more than they care about their own? Because they better. If they don't, you're not invest with them. They better treat your money better than their own. And I think that that's something that's missing. People are like, I need to get some return on my money because it's sitting dead. And I don't care. You have a good story. That's what a pro forma business plan is. It's a theoretical story and it's basically a lie. And then you have results and there's an autopsy. It's called financials. But pro formas are just lies that people make up. You can make any pro forma look like anything. Let's be honest. It doesn't matter. Oh, look, I'm assuming that rent growth is going to be 7. It's only been 2, but things are changing. It's different this time. You ever heard that one before? It's different this time.
Yeah.
You know, it's different this time. Yeah. Things do change, but they echo. Mark Twain said that. Echoes. It's the same thing in different forms over and over again. So it's the question, where am I looking? I'm looking inside people's souls. That's where I'm looking.
Love it. Love it.
Like, this is great. No, I think our listeners are going to really love this episode. Or, you know, as you're listening, I would go back and listen to it again and again and again. A lot of good info and, you know, introspection. Like, you can look inside and be very intentional with your thoughts and really what you focus on. You know, I love the people aspect of that, because you really are, at the end of the day, you're investing in, especially if you invest in passively, you're investing in the team.
100%. That is the most important element to this, and it's the least focused on. Mm-hmm. And you can ask if they have experience. The question is, do you trust them?
Yep.
And it's not just, do you like them? Because there's this whole process of when you do business with people, you like them, you trust them, you like them, you know them, you trust them. And that's cool. Don't be so anxious. I think a lot of people are thinking if they don't do something today, then they're going to get behind because we have FOMO. Everybody's chasing shiny objects on scrolls on Instagram or Facebook or whatever.
TikTok.
And TikTok. And God knows what else is out there that I'm missing because I'm just like not into it. And we're impatient. And the impatience is very costly. You think about what happens when you lose $100,000. How long does it take you to create $100,000 of extra cash? Not working for it, but extra cash. It's not a day or a week or a month or a year. For most people, it's freaking years. And it takes one bad decision to lose $100,000. So you better be really mindful, because if you don't protect your capital, it will go away.
Good stuff, man. No, this is great. So, Damien, if anybody wants to get in contact with you, follow on social media, or just learn more about what you're doing, how can they get a hold of you?
Best place that you want to learn more about me is FU. it's financialunderdogs.com. That's nice. A podcast. That's where, yeah, I live, and that's where I rant. I even made a podcast this last week, and I did it, and then I uploaded it, but I forgot to put the audio, and then I deleted the audio. So all you have is like just text which was the dumbest podcast ever. So sometimes that happens because, like, you know, we're human and this is not choreographed. It's just live, raw, real. And that's what FU is. It's live, raw, and real. And nice. I talk about money and the realities of it. I'm not going to blow smoke up anybody's skirt. I'm going to give you the real deal based on a bald life.
Love it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for being on. And everybody check out the last episode. We had Damian on. And please get a hold of him. It's Real Estate Investor MBA. Damian, thanks for being here.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Thank you.